Fantastic
song. Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Mvudis, can you hear me?
I can hear you very clearly, sir.
Ah, lovely, lovely. I hope your day has been fine.
My day has been fine, and I hope yours has been fine too, as well, as the AWR listeners.
Yes, yes, or not? Definitely, definitely, Pastor. You know, we are continuing to chat about this sin problem, and we started on Monday. So if you're joining us for the first time and you're listening in for the first time, we do have Pastor Johannes Malulege, who is on the line talking to us about sin, you know, basically breaking down the issue into pieces so that we can, you know, easily understand it. And there are certain things that the world collectively agrees on, you know, regarding to sin or evil. You know, Christians and non-Christians alike are generally in agreement, you know, that murder is evil, lying, for instance, is generally looked down upon, stealing is wrong, you know, in pretty much in any society. However, in all honesty, we also seem to place more weight on some sins, you know, than on others. So we're going to be talking to that as we continue with this particular talk this afternoon. For this, yesterday we, you know, finished off on a great note, and I want us to actually get to the issue of seeing if you lie for the right reasons, you know. Would you still be considered to be sinning? You know, some people are faced with the, you know, seemingly impossible choices. I mean, even in scripture, when we read, we see Rahab, you know, lying to protect the Israelite spies that she was hiding. And of course, she was rewarded for it even. Are there terms and conditions for the law negotiable, or the law, is it negotiable depending on the situation? I mean, of course, she lied. That's a sin, according to what we understand. But looks like she got a reward from it. It was not so bad after all. So, conditional?
Yeah. So let's respond adequately to that question. She lied. She lied. There's no other way we can sugarcoat it. Mm. The motive and the intention was right, but the Bible does not commend her for lying.
Mm-hmm.
There is nowhere scripture commends her for lying.
Okay.
What she is rewarded for is her faith.
Mm.
Hebrews chapter 11 says, and by faith, Rahab the harlot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She hung a scarlet cord. That's what saved her. Mm-hmm. And that is the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
That when we come here, when we come here, you will be saved with your family.
Mm.
Only if you are going to hang a scarlet or a reddish cord outside so that we can see it. And when the walls of Jericho fell, only Rahab's house remained standing. Mm. And she was saved. Now, she was saved by faith in what was given to her as a condition of her salvation. She was not saved by her lies.
So the lies were just overlooked.
The scripture does not condemn. The scripture does not condone. It's silent on the lies, but we know that she was saved for her faith. Because she tells these people that we have heard, you know, we are trembling, we are scared because we have heard of your God who fights for you. Your God who opens peace for you.
Yeah.
She already had faith in that God. And because of faith in that God, she acted, well, she lied. And the lie is not is neither condemned nor condoned in scripture. The scripture is silent. But we know the men, when they leave, they say, she begs these men, when, you know, she hides them. And then after the spies of the king come, you know, she takes them out and then she tells them which route to take. And then she says, save me and my family. And then they give her condition. So, I'm saying, I don't want to say it's overlooked. The Bible is just silent on her lies, but it emphasizes what is it that saved her? Her faith. That one is, we are sure it was her faith.
Yeah.
And she took action. If she had faith and she did not take action of putting the red scarlet cord, she was not going to be saved with her family. So we know that she was not saved by lying.
I see. I see. Well, and then you wanted to mention Abraham, who also lied.
He also lied when he said Sarah was his half-sister. It was not a complete lie. It was a half-truth because they were truly sister and brother. They had the same father.
So it was a white
different
lie.
Mother. It was, it was an incomplete truth or a sin by omission, yes.
Okay, all right.
It was a white lie. But God interferes to save him because, we don't give God credit when we fail and when we make mistakes.
Yeah,
God intervenes by talking to the man that took his wife.
Mm.
Say, that is a man, that is a man's wife. Don't touch her. You know, and the man goes to Abraham and said, what is this that you have done to me? You have not told me that this woman is your wife. I acted in my integrity. But even God says, if I know that you acted in your integrity, but if you don't return that man's wife, you are dead meat. So he did not tell the complete truth, but God knew it was risky for if this man had slept with Sarah, who was supposed to give birth to an heir, you know, Isaac. This is interfering with the plan of God, and God himself, intervenes. So the lies of Abraham are again not condoned.
Neither.
We don't see a clear condemnation also of them, but they are neither condoned nor condemned.
They're just ignored. All right. No, that's fine. We okay with that. We're okay with that. So we're going to just pass right along. We still have some stuff to go through. Now, is there any sin, that is bigger than the other? I mean, that is in God's eyes. Even in the legal system, a criminal who is convicted of murder won't get the same sentence as the one who is convicted of, shoplifting, for instance. Now, does God view a murderer the same way he viewed, a person who has told a white lie, like Abraham in this instance, perhaps to protect someone's feeling or to, for a greater cause, but they lied nonetheless, and here's somebody who's murdered. So effectively what we want to check is God, in the bigger scheme of things, looking at sin differently? No, this one's a big sin. Okay, this one, yeah, it's a sin also, but hey, how does God look at it?
I'm going to apologize that I don't have a quotation that I would have liked to read from Steps to Christ, but there is no sin is small in the sight of God. However, in human sight, not all sins are equal. Not all crimes are equal. Also in God's sight, but none of them is small. Because remember, Adam and Eve, we are where we are because they simply ate a fruit. I mean, how terrible is that? They simply ate a fruit. Saul, King Saul, simply did not kill all the cattle and all the lambs that he was supposed to kill. And then he brought King Agag. And then he thinks, that's not so bad. You know, when Samuel comes, Samuel says, what have you done? What the Lord has asked you to do? And he says, yes, I have. We have wiped them out, but we have brought of the fat of the cattle, of the good things of the Amalekites. And, and Samuel says, what is this bleating of the sheep? You know, so it goes on in that chapter to say the sin of rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. Because we would think that David was a worse sinner than King Saul, but it's rebellion nevertheless. And so the sin also of Adam and Eve was simply to eat a fruit, but they were told not to eat it because if they eat of it, they would surely die. So sin, let me just say, there is no sin is small in the sight of God, but even stealing, just dealing with the Old Testament.
Yeah.
With stealing, if someone stole, they wouldn't be stoned to death, they would be asked to repay sometimes fourfold, sometimes fivefold. You know, there were percentages given that you have stolen someone's property. You need to take it back and return it. And that's why, Lazarus, when Jesus says to him, come down, for today I'm going to your house.
Yeah.
For salvation has come into this house. Mm. And is it Lazarus? No. Zacchaeus.
Yeah.
Zacchaeus.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And
yes,
he
yes,
says,
yes.
I will give half of my wealth to the poor. And if I have defrauded anybody, I will restore fourfold. Okay? But anyway,
yeah,
to cut the long story short, when we go to the book of Revelation, it tells us who will not make it to the kingdom of heaven.
Mm.
You know, adulterer will not make it. Can I go there quickly?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's verse, Revelation chapter 21, verse 7. It says, he who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. But the cowardly, unbelieving, we talked about the sin of unbelief,
yeah,
abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. And maybe, you see, liars are included here. But I can also go back to the Ten Commandments, it says, thou shall not, it doesn't say thou shall not lie. It says, thou shall not bear false witness against thy neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of sin is never, will never be held guiltless when you are a false witness against your neighbor. So I'm not God, but I think in the case of Rahab, God will look at the motive and God will look at the faith that she exercised. In case of Abraham also, God may look at the faith that he already had, as his, you know, that he had left his country and his kinsmen. And of course, he feared because of the people around him that did not know. He was just a stranger. So maybe God looks at all those things in totality. But when we become a false witness against our neighbor, that is never held guiltless. I don't know if that makes sense to you. So in the case of Rahab, she was not bearing false witness against anyone. In the case of Abraham, he was not bearing false witness against anyone, like the people who condemned Jesus.
They just a white lie.
They were bearing. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, interesting that, and please do explain this for us, coming from Proverbs chapter 6, I think from around 16, talking about the six things that the Lord hates that are detestable and he cannot tolerate them. And there he talks about a lying tongue.
Mm-hmm.
He detests it, cannot stand it. And yet in some parts we see that, well, it tolerates it because it was for the common good. Of course, it's not condemned it was just, you know.
Condoned. Not condoned.
Yeah, not condoned and not condemned. It was just, you know, God didn't comment on it. And yet we see that very strong feelings that God has against this thing. You know, it's literally mentioned there with the hands that shed, you know, and blood, heart that deceived, devices, wicked schemes, etc., etc. False witness. You spoke about false witness as well, that pours out lies.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, a man who stirs up dissension, among others. These are things that God absolutely hates and detests. Yet it seems as though he has not shown that this thing is detestable to him when it involved, you know, saving other people. Just make that part make sense.
Which examples would we be talking about now? Because we did mention Rahab, that she was not, Bible is silent. It does not condone, it does not condemn, but she was not saved because she lied.
I understand.
She was saved because she exercised faith in God.
What I'm trying to get to is that if you detest something, if you absolutely hate something, you definitely are not going to leave it unattended. And yet in these instances of Rahab and Abraham, seems that God didn't attend to it and just attended to other issues, periphery issues around it. And what I want to find out is that does he detest it the way he actually says he absolutely hates it? You know, he rejects and he hates this thing absolutely in accordance to what is written in Proverbs?
For me, I believe he hates it. And in all instances, in many instances where people lied or misrepresented the truth or they conspired, you know, they paid. If we talk about Daniel, where people made a law specifically so that he can be trapped and be thrown into the lion's den, because that they were challenging God in that. They paid for that, you know, because it was manipulative. It was scheming. They paid. Not only they, the men only, but their wives and their children.
Yeah.
In John, in Daniel chapter 3, well, in the case of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, those who reported that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did not bow down, we don't see them scheming like the ones in chapter 6.
Yeah, yeah.
They simply reported. They simply reported. So we do not find anywhere in scripture where it says they were also thrown into the fire because they simply reported the truth that they saw. The difference is that the ones in chapter 6, they schemed.
I see.
And God does not like that. He hates that. Zipporah and Aaron, Numbers chapter, it should be Numbers chapter 12. They started, you know, gossiping, talking, being dissatisfied with the position that Moses held. And they started complaining even about his wife. God dealt with that because it is talk that is not respectful of even the person that God has placed in a position.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They were also respected by God, but because of their jealousy, they started talking things that were hurtful, and God dealt with that. Zipporah was punished with leprosy, and the camp had to wait. I think it was 7 days. So I could go on and on. I'm just thinking about many other examples, but lies have never been tolerated. But God usually exercises grace, and you know, we usually think God is waiting to punish us for the mistakes that we do. But in fact, the truth is, in spite of, if you read the Bible, in spite of our mistakes and serious faults that people commit, God saves us in spite of those. And I could give many examples also as far as that is concerned. But I mean, Jacob, the deceptive one, God dealt with him because he was going to receive the birthright, because God said it from the beginning when they were still in their mother's womb. Rebecca says, why is it, what is going on? And God says, two nations are within you, but the elder will serve the younger. So already from their birth, Rebecca knew. Was it necessary to deceive Esau, what's the name, Isaac, so that Jacob receives the blessing? It was not necessary. They needed to trust God that at the right time, Isaac would give the blessing to Jacob. But they took matters into their own hands with the mother. Jacob paid because he never saw his mother alive again. Now, for the deception, he never saw his mother again. He went through hardships with his uncle. You know, he was a deceiver and he was being deceived by his uncle so many times. He paid the price. His own sons deceived him. They told him, they sold Jacob, Joseph, and they told him that he was killed by the beasts of the wild. So God dealt with Jacob's deception. That's why I'm saying I could go to many cases, but I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah, yeah.
To make the point.
Yes, yes, Mfundisi. Well, let's wrap it up, Mfundisi. See, God mentions, you know, in fact, Proverbs, you know, he mentions but these six or seven things that the Lord hates and absolutely detests and cannot tolerate. And he singles out these ones. It's giving an idea that, these ones that I've mentioned here, But these ones I can't stand, absolutely. But hang on, we can deal with the others. But these ones, yeah. So it gives a sense that there's some inequality among these sins. That if you do these seven ones, Mamel is going to lose it. But hang, we can negotiate on others. I'm getting that sense. Is that sense maybe misguided?
I don't think I'm not able to grasp the question. I'm not getting the same sense. I don't know how I would respond to that question, really, because God has dealt with different kinds of sins, you know, in the Bible, including those that you mentioned, because
So the question really is why mention these ones specifically and lump them as a special group of sins?
Yeah, I think these are an amplification of the eighth commandment. Do not bear false witness against your neighbor. I think it's an amplification of those, because we could also go to Proverbs chapter 5 and then it would amplify on commandment number 7. If you read the book of Proverbs, it will most probably cover the different commandments. If you go to Proverbs chapter 1, it will be dealing with do not hang around with those who are intent on doing evil, who will kill and shed innocent blood. So I don't want to look at only this portion and amplify it. We have to look at the whole book of Proverbs and say, I can go to the book of Proverbs. It deals with many things, including laziness, you know, and industry. And there are so many verses that have to deal with the tongue. Just the tongue, not only lying, but also the tone of speaking. If I look at the book of Proverbs in totality, I would say it deals with different kinds of sins, but maybe different chapters would highlight on certain things. So I would say this portion that you have read, it's amplifying on the commandment that deals with speech and misrepresenting and slandering.
All right. Well, Pastor, I think that I must, appreciate the time that you've spent with us once again here on AWR. Absolutely, absolutely important subject, because, these days anything goes and anything is allowable and acceptable. And, we just go easy on those things. So tomorrow we're going to be concluding our talk. And one of the things that we wish to address tomorrow is how do we, we do know that God hates sin, etc., etc. And the church, perhaps, and the role the church plays in administering that on behalf of God. We've got situations where people are disciplined, etc., because they have sinned. They've committed adultery, so they must be censured, or they must be excommunicated, or whatever the case is. And it seems that these are sinful human beings themselves, who are not perfect and who have sins, yet they are in a position where they actually, put penalties on others. So we want to look at that tomorrow. But for today, I think we'll let it go there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pastor.
Enjoyed the talk with you. Yes.
Lovely.
Looking forward to wrapping up tomorrow. Bye.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.